Imagine a land so hostile that you'd need special equipment just to breathe, where there's no shade, and where the solar radiation would kill you in minutes. At night, temperatures plummet to sub-zero. You could freeze or fry in the same day. This is not some faraway planet. It's Earth, as it would have been 500 million years ago when the land was alien and uninhabitable. Back then, life was found only in the sea. How did life conquer this hostile world, taking an evolutionary journey that would one day lead to us? Over the millennia, this harsh new world was invaded by a few pioneering life forms. These evolved into a multitude of animal designs able to cope with the extremes of life on land. Our family, the mammals, is just one of the results. Every living thing is linked by the branches on the tree of life. In this program, we're going to find out just how this extraordinary variety of animals arose and how we are connected to each and every one of them. It's a story full of surprises, which leads all the way from a fish to you and me. And how, if it wasn't for one giant twist of fate, the dinosaurs might still rule supreme today. In the beginning, dry land was a no-go area for life, because all life started in the sea, where the temperature hardly changes and water protects against the pull of gravity and the burning sun. The sea was the first laboratory of life, and for more than three quarters of life's history, it was home to every living thing. This was mostly a gentle era of soft-bodied creatures like jellyfish. Jellyfish are 95% water and have no skeleton at all. Unlike us, they don't need one, because water gives them all the buoyancy and support they need. Water suspends all life in a three-dimensional world. For a diver, it's a bit like floating in space. It enables these kelp fronds to tower 30 meters upwards from the ocean bed. In fact, just like the animals, for hundreds of millions of years, plants could only exist in the sea. Watery support would all be gone. So what would happen then? The kelp would collapse. And the diver would suddenly be aware of the weight of his equipment, because gravity is now dragging him down. How could any animal designed for life in the sea ever make it on dry land? One group of sea creatures had just the right kit to get up and go. The arthropods, with their hard, jointed outer skeletons. This living suit of armor holds their body up, so gravity can't pull it down. Gave the arthropods the staying power they needed to make it on land. And it's made crabs expert land grabbers. In Florida, crabs have even invaded people's gardens. And the lawns are riddled with their burrows. These blue land crabs can live up to 5 kilometers from water. Crabs are actually well adapted to life on land. Their jointed outer skeleton may have evolved in the sea, but it also supports their weight on land, making it easier for them to get around. And it helps stop them from drying out. They roam at will and pop up in surprising places. And they're not fussy about what they eat. On the other side of the world, in the Indian Ocean, there's a land where crabs have really made themselves at home. Christmas Island is completely overrun with red land crabs. 120 million live on this small island, outnumbering the human residents by 300,000 to 1. Once a year, vast numbers hit the road. They're heading for the beach. Why? Because despite their armor, they can't shake off their ties to the sea. There's a vital purpose to this mass maneuver. The females clasp thousands of soft eggs underneath them. Like all land crabs, they have to return to water to release their eggs. Their young still have to grow up in the sea. But the first creatures ever to venture on land lived long before crabs even existed. We know because they left their footprints. Preserved in the rock in what is now Ontario, Canada, are the oldest footprints anywhere on Earth. Just a few small steps for a bug, but one giant leap for life. These prints are 500 million years old, and their maker is thought to have been another armored arthropod, a bit like a giant woodlouse, more than 30 centimeters long. What made this ancient trailblazer drag itself ashore onto the barren land? Five hundred million years ago, There were so many hardened hunters in the ocean that it had become a dangerous place. For the first time in the history of life, there was good reason to leave the crowded seas. There's another ancient creature that still retraces those first pioneering steps each year. The horseshoe crab has been around for hundreds of millions of years. And every year, it still makes a dramatic pilgrimage onto the beaches of North America to breed. Horseshoe crabs lay their eggs on land to put them out of reach of marine predators. And it's probably the same reason that brought those early trailblazers ashore. Job done, the horseshoe crabs turn round and crawl straight back into the sea. Those first track makers were probably just visitors too. About 430 million years ago, another group of arthropods abandoned the sea for good. The colonization of the land had truly begun. And it was creatures like these millipedes that led the way. Others soon followed, spider and scorpion-like creatures, almost 100 million years before our ancestors left the sea. Today, more than 90% of land dwellers are arthropods, most of them insects. Amongst the most successful are the ants, which keep their eggs and young moist in nests underground. Driver ants have evolved sophisticated strategies to breed and feed on land. By massing in their millions around the nest, they raise its temperature and speed up the development of the young inside. Their sturdy skeletons carry them easily across the ground and stop them drying out. These fearsome jaws have made them deadly hunters. Thousands work together as one giant predator, devouring everything in its path. And many jaws make light work of creatures far bigger than themselves. But the arthropod's jointed construction does have drawbacks. The bigger they get, the heavier their armor, and the harder it is to breathe. It would take another group of animals to overcome this hurdle. Starting around 550 million years ago with a tiny worm-like sea creature. This is its closest living relative, the lancelet. It has a revolutionary feature vital to our evolution. A rod running through the body called the notochord. It provided a strong yet flexible lever for muscles to pull against and led to the evolution of a whole new family of backboned animals, the vertebrates. Having your skeleton inside allows you to grow much, much bigger. The backbone's evolution happened only once, but this lucky break was a crucial turning point in the journey of life. It led to all the vertebrates. That's fish, amphibians, reptiles, birds, and mammals. Including you and me. But to walk, you need legs. How did they evolve? Underwater, mud skippers look much like other fish. But watch what they can do with their fins. A fish that walks. Well, almost. The mud skipper can shuffle over land using two pairs of modified fins. This is how we once thought backbone creatures left the water. Ancient fish propped themselves up on fins, and once ashore, the fins turned into legs. We now know that something even more surprising happened. Legs actually evolved for use in the water. How? Deep in the ocean, other bizarre creatures seem to walk across the seabed. Batfish never leave the sea, and they can swim perfectly well. But they too use their fins like pairs of legs. By stalking prey on stilt-like feet, they don't stir up water or sand. So this shrimp doesn't have a clue. The frogfish has also evolved two pairs of modified fin feet to help it navigate the nooks and crannies of the ocean floor. So fishy fin feet weren't a new idea, but evolution didn't really run with it until around 370 million years ago, when the climate changed. The earth warmed up and became covered in shallow, weedy swamps, where normal fins got in the way. Over time, the paired fins started to evolve a better shape for pushing through the weeds, until they ended up more like 4 feet. And those early four-footed creatures left a legacy which can be traced throughout the tree of life, right up to the present day. They were the ancestors of all land-living, backboned animals. The four-legged blueprint had been set, and all vertebrates that have ever lived on land have followed the same basic pattern. But this was just a fluke of nature. If our ancestral fish had had more fins, we might have ended up with extra pairs of arms. And we now know that we might easily have had many more fingers and toes. Fossils show that some of those early four-legged creatures that crawled through the swamps had 6, 7, or even 8 fingers. But the one successful species that became the ancestor of all the later vertebrates just happened to have 5 fingers and toes. So having 5 fingers and 4 limbs is an ancient blueprint all land-living animals inherited. But what about a horse, you might ask? They don't have 5 fingers. Well, not today, but their ancestors did. And you can find some of those lost toes at the start of every horse's life. An unborn foal has 2 extra toes in each foot, only present in the first months of its life. In a replay of the horse's evolutionary past, they fold back into the central cannon bone before the foal is born. We now know how our underwater ancestors evolved to walk, but there were other challenges they had to face in leaving water for the hostile land. to start with. How would they manage to breathe? Down here, we need special breathing equipment. And in the same way that we'd drown without this diving gear, most fish would suffocate on land. Remarkably, though, some fish can breathe air like us, as they have done for 400 million years. Lungfish, still alive and well in Africa, Australia, and South America today. For those first sea creatures that came ashore, it took the winning formula of lungs and legs to make the quantum leap from ocean to land. Enter the first four-legged air breathers, our ancestors. But even these groundbreaking creatures couldn't conquer dry land yet. They needed shade and moisture, so they had to wait until another group invaded first, the woody plants. Early plants were tiny algae, and like every other form of life, confined to water. Just like animals, to make it on the land, they had to combat gravity. They evolved a skeleton made up of rings of lignin, plant's equivalent of bone. Now they could leave water and stand alone. Lignin gave the plant cells strength to keep on growing up and up, reaching towards the sunlight. Lignin eventually expanded to fill up the cell walls and form wood. And wood allowed plants to really make it big. They evolved into the incredible hulks of the land, the trees. So lignin created wood, and wood created forests, without which we wouldn't exist. A new, damp, shady world opened up for those early four-legged animals to explore. Even today, some 350 million years later, amphibians still can't escape the pull of their aquatic roots. Every spring, just after the snow melts, there's an extraordinary mass migration through the forests of Northeast America. Thousands of spotted salamanders that have spent the past year hidden underground emerge with one mission in mind. To get to water for a single night of passion. The following night, the females spawn. Amphibian eggs are soft and dry out quickly in the air, which is why spotted salamanders still have to return to the water to breed. Ever since their ancestors first crawled out of the swamps, amphibians have come up with all kinds of weird and wonderful ways to break free from the water. The mountains of northern Spain, a rocky, barren landscape. But the midwife toad is perfectly at home. It has evolved to live and breed on dry land. So what do midwife toads do that salamanders don't? A pair meet up and start to mate. The male's embrace squeezes the female until she releases her eggs. She catches them in her back legs where he fertilizes them. But how will the eggs survive without water? The male midwife is one of nature's most devoted dads. He hoists the eggs up his legs as if wriggling into a pair of shorts. From now on, the eggs are his responsibility. And for the first few weeks, he holds up under a rock to keep them moist. After that, however, he has to emerge to find a pond. And there the tadpoles wriggle free and grow up just like other toads. What other solutions has evolution come up with so frogs and toads can live further away from water? This forest in Costa Rica is full of frogs calling to their mates. There don't seem to be many pools and streams around here. So how do they breed? The strawberry poison arrow frog carries its tadpole on its back. The tadpole hatched out on the ground, but now it gets a piggyback as mum begins a mother of a climb. One at a time, she carries each one of her four or five tadpoles all the way up into the trees. Each to its own cradle in the canopy. An egg cup-sized pond in these hanging gardens, up to 7 meters above the forest floor. And after all this effort, Mum's still got more work to do. A few days later, she must make the same climb all over again, because although her tadpole has got water in its treetop nursery, it has no food. So it waits, like a chick in its nest. As she lowers herself in, the tadpole headbutts her, even giving her a nip, until she lays an infertile egg for it to eat. With these regular food parcels, the tadpole has all it needs in its tiny world to grow into a frog. Strawberry poison arrow frogs may be the hardest working frog mothers on earth, but another frog is the most devoted father. Guess where the Darwin's frog keeps his tadpoles? The male's throat is the nursery where they grow. Then he gives birth, as it were, by spitting out the froglets fully formed. So the Darwin's frog has reduced its need for water by carrying its own pond around inside. But despite all these extraordinary solutions, almost all amphibians are still basically tied to water, just as their early ancestors were. So how did the first landlubbers colonize the deserts and dry lands? The entire spawning process had to be transformed. Eggs evolved their own internal life support system, and at the same time, shells developed that could hold water. The arrival of the hard-shelled egg was one giant step forward on the journey of life. Each egg provided the growing youngster with its own private pond. Eggs could now be laid on dry land, and this led to a whole new group of animals, the reptiles. Reptile eggs contain more food reserves than those of the amphibians, giving their babies a head start in life. Australian bearded dragons hatch out fully formed and ready to take on the world, just as they've done for millions of years. The reptiles evolved into a multitude of families, including one of the most impressive dynasties ever to dominate the land. The smash hit that was the hard-shelled egg led to the age of the dinosaurs. Dinosaurs ruled the Earth for about 180 million years. There were as many as 700 species, from the size of a rat to that of a whale. And the egg wasn't the reptile's only strength. They also developed tough, scaly armor that could withstand the driest conditions on Earth. And you don't get much drier than the sand dunes of Namibia. But even here, reptiles have solved the problem of drying out, and they can turn the power of the sun to their advantage. First thing in the morning, the cold-blooded chameleon heats up along the side facing the sun. Once it's recharged its solar batteries, it's ready to go hunting. Here, the armored arthropods have met their match. Despite arriving more than 100 million years later, reptiles now appear to have the upper claw. But even reptiles have their limitations, because they slow down as the temperature drops. And when the sun is gone, it can get very cold. We mammals, on the other hand, can remain active whether it's hot or cold. That's because we heat ourselves from the inside by burning food as fuel. A human face shows white hot, while this iguana's is a cool red. Because while we stay warm as we generate heat inside, the iguana is cooling down as it loses the heat it absorbed from the sun during the day. But we need to keep the heat we generate. Otherwise, we'd have to eat non-stop just to stay alive. What's required is effective insulation. So there would have to be another breakthrough to allow land animals to reach the coldest corners of the world. About 200 million years ago, a reptile-like ancestor of mammals started growing fine barbs underneath its scales. Over many generations, they became finer and longer, until eventually they turned into hair and fur. The mammals had arrived, and now they were ready to take on the elements anywhere. Musk oxen have the ultimate fur coats. Their insulation is so good, they can survive at temperatures of minus 30 degrees Celsius. Warmed by their central heating and stoked up by regular meals, musk oxen have managed to beat the elements and eat their way north to the fringes of the Arctic Ocean. Central heating and fur coats let mammals range even to the icy reaches of the poles. And this must be the ultimate test. Dense fur allows a baby seal to undergo the biggest temperature shock experienced by any animal on Earth. From around 40 degrees Celsius inside its mother's body to as low as minus 30 when it's born and hits the ice. The miracle of this baby's survival here depends not just on fur, but on its mother's dedication. She provides milk, the fuel that keeps it warm inside. But the ultimate mammal mother lives in Africa. It takes nearly 22 months to make a baby elephant, longer than any other animal. During that time, the embryo floats in its own centrally heated world, an echo of life's earliest existence in warm primeval seas. It's safer than inside an egg. Mum has total control over the baby's growth. After investing all that effort even before birth, it's not surprising mammals take exceptional care of their young. For a mammal mother, birth is just the start of a long and demanding job. Mum is a mobile milk bar, and delivering enough of the white stuff to build up baby is an even greater drain on her than pregnancy. Milk is highly nutritious, and at this stage, it's the only food the baby needs. No wonder others try to steal it. Like all mammals, baby elephants learn through play. A great excuse to mess around. The evolution of mammals has been an extraordinary journey. Our ancestors evolved a backbone, lungs, and four limbs, with five fingers and toes. And we grew fur and installed central heating, which could cope with the extremes of temperature on land. But mammals needed other changes to move from the water to the air. For one thing, they needed a totally new way of picking up sound. And when it comes to ears, few mammals are more advanced than the bat-eared fox. It lives in the South African bush where it scans the ground, listening for a meal. It hears in the same way as all mammals do. It's just more sensitive. Broad outer ears capture the sound waves in the air and funnel them through to the eardrum, making it vibrate. Tiny bones in the middle ear transmit and amplify those vibrations. Sound waves are then converted into nerve impulses and sent to the brain. Bat-eared foxes can hear grubs and termites moving nearly 30 centimeters below the ground. So how did the chance workings of evolution create such a remarkable device? Believe it or not, it all began in the solid jaws of prehistoric reptilians. Two of the jaw bones got detached. They shrank and moved upwards to become the key components of the mammal ear, hijacked by evolution for a totally different use. It's amazing to think that these tiny, delicate bones evolved from the solid, biting jaws of our reptile-like ancestors. Mammals have now reached all corners of the globe and can live almost anywhere. But this could have been a very different story. More more than 100 million years after the mammals arrived, the land was still ruled by the dinosaurs. Most of the early mammals were small, shrew-like creatures which ventured out mainly at night. The dramas of their lives took place entirely in the shadow of the giants. A cataclysmic event 65 million years ago played right into the mammals' hands. A massive meteorite collided with the Earth. Percent of all land-dwelling animals were snuffed out. Dinosaurs became extinct over just a few thousand years. But among the animals that did survive were mammals. Perhaps that was because they fed on the other major group of survivors, armored arthropods. With the dinosaurs now gone, the mammals seized their chance, diversifying and expanding to fill the world. The mammal line exploded into the wonderful variety we see today. Ultimately, that led to us. If that meteorite had missed the Earth, we probably wouldn't be here. We've come a long way since our ancestors first crawled out of the sea and coped with everything this hostile new world could throw at us. But can we really call ourselves the true inheritors of the Earth? No. That title belongs to the armored arthropods. They colonized the land 100 million years before we vertebrates, and today they outnumber all other animals combined. On their journey of life, the land-grabbing arthropods developed an apparently bomb-proof design. No doubt they will still be here long after we are gone.